Hello and good afternoon. This is 101.9 FM, KVSH, Voice of Vashon. You're listening to Raise the Vibe. I'm your host, Liz Peterson, and today I have Jamie Wolf joining me in the studio again. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Liz. Great to be here.
Great to have you. I have Jamie via Zoom, so y'all can check it out on YouTube, my YouTube channel, later if you're interested. Great. So, Jamie, why don't you start off for those who are unfamiliar with you, a little bit about yourself?
Well, Liz, I'm a teacher. I am a public speaker and lead seminars basically for about 10,000 different people per year. I work with law enforcement, social workers, teachers, and then regular humans. I do some online seminars and did one last year on love and relationships. It was a lot of fun. Maybe you heard about it.
Yes, I did. That was fantastic. Yeah, you invited me to it, and I was able to join on a couple calls, not all of them, unfortunately, and I hope you do it again. It was wonderful work.
It was fun. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, so today we are talking about implicit bias. So why don't you...
bias, yep. Such a rich topic to be discussing right now, given our present predicament in this country. Or predicaments, really, plural. Yeah. So implicit bias, just so I can define it for folks,
please,
is really all the stuff that we believe about all the stuff that we believe. So we all have notions and ideas about how people should look or dress or what people should look like in terms of gender, the color of their skin, what all of those things mean. So I remember the very first time I saw you in the hardware store, and you were walking by, and I remember that I had all kinds of implicit bias. So can I just tell you?
Oh, please.
Yeah. So I remember I thought at the time that you are a person who did yoga, right? That just whoop into my head. She's a yoga mama, and oh, she looks nice. She looks like an introvert. Because of the way that you were having eye contact and not having eye contact with people. And it really, I was aware of that, and I'm aware of that when I meet people, especially because I teach about implicit bias. So I like to pay attention to what is the story that I'm telling myself about this person. And I can actually play with it because I know that it's nonsense until I verify with that person what's really true about them.
Right.
And that, you know, I thought you looked like a really nice person. And it was funny for probably... a year I would go in there and you were never our waitress. So I never could ever, you know, check out any of my theories to see what was true. So yeah, implicit bias, it's all the things that we believe, and the it's different than our belief system. It's the things that we believe about the things that we're seeing. So the lenses through which we see the world. So it gets really interesting when we understand what that is, when we can work with it and actually acknowledge that we're making these assumptions really about human beings. It can also be dangerous, and it's really the reason that we're seeing some of these things happen in front of us. The death of George Floyd, I just saw that there's another really nasty thing that happened in Los Angeles. Just watching this police officer beat this Mexican guy. He's not even fighting. He's just sitting there, and the guy is just, so how does that happen? How do these things happen? It's all about implicit bias. So was that a good definition? How am I doing so far?
Yeah, doing good.
Okay. Well, I'm going to draw us a little picture because I think it will be helpful. Let's see if I can do this around my,
I was online reading about it too, and they had a interesting association or way of looking at it. It's like how people feel about pit bulls, how they have that automatic assumption about what that pit bull is going to be like without even, you know, testing out the character of the dog first.
Right, right. It's interesting. You know, I'm on a I'm dating, and this woman that I was having this conversation with told me that she had a, I think you call it a cane corso.
Oh, a cane corso.
Yeah, those. And I was like, you know, we're done. Because, and that's implicit bias. Mm-hmm. You can tell me how nice her dog was all day long. There's no way I'm going to bring my cute little dogs around her dog. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah. So, you know, Liz, if we think about this as and I know your listeners can't hear this, but I just drew a thing that kind of looks like a peanut, and it's, you know, my interpretation of a brain, and there's a line cut probably 3/4 of the way up. And, you know, and we have our subconscious, and our subconscious is running stuff all the time. Neurolinguistic programming tells us, and science tells us, that there are literally trillions of pieces of information and data that are happening the whole time. And our subconscious is benevolent. It's just there to help us, but it feeds us information into our consciousness that it thinks might be relevant to the situation. But it also makes decisions about information that's going on in our operating system without us being conscious of it at all. And this is where it gets scary. If I'm not even conscious that I'm thinking these things about whatever that is. So how does implicit bias work out? Well, you know, when we're little kids, our parents tell us about what religions are right. And so my parents taught me that Catholics were bad and they worshiped the mother of Jesus, and that was not okay. And their big thing was, would you go thank the firefighter's mother if the firefighter saved you anyway? When I would meet Catholics, you know, this was the image that came in my mind. It was how I was trained. It was my implicit bias. And it wasn't until years later that I really learned about the Virgin Mary and the sacredness and all of those things. And then we learn about, you know, race is kind of another dot. You know, for your listeners, I'm just making some dots in our subconscious. And information is just flying in at us as we're growing up. And people just give us all kinds of stuff. And then, you know, we talk about gender or height, you know, how tall people are, or whatever the thing is. We have all this downloaded information in our head about what's true. And the scary part is we believe it's true unless we pull those things up and unpack them and really look at, you know, what's actually happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're under attack by somebody and we have learned that people who point guns at us are dangerous, and so I can then run away or fight them, then that's helpful. And when we're really under danger, the problem is that most of the things that are in our subconscious aren't really true in the moment. So one of the tools I like to teach people that have reactivity when I'm working with private clients around this is to ask, just because I feel scared right now, am I really in danger? You know, so a woman walking down the street and she sees a man walking towards her, she might feel upset. But the real question is, am I really in danger right now?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this some kind of old story bubbling up? Or do I have implicit bias about a man that looks like he looks? Whatever that thing is.
Right.
We had somebody posted a picture of a guy in a mask on one of our little things today, and the guy had a big beard coming out of it, and somebody said, oh look, ZZ Top, right? So every guy who has a big thing is now going to be ZZ Top. That's kind of a rough generalization about people, but oh my goodness, we have so much implicit bias. People who wear a ring on their left hand symbolizes this, but it also can mean that, and what does that mean? So pretty soon, you know, we're little kids and we're walking around with all of these things. I'm going to tell you a real hard implicit bias story. I was, this was many, many years ago in another lifetime. And the problem is our conscious mind doesn't see any of it. So it's just processing. Once I know what it is, I actually ask myself, what are the stories I'm telling myself about this person, which I recommend to people as a practice, because it's laughable, some of the stuff that will just bubble up. And then I know what's there. But this was many, many years ago, and I took my girlfriend's nephew to the grocery store, and we were standing in line. And he points to the kid who's putting the groceries in the bag, and he says to me, he called me Nana, Nana, bad man. And the guy was black. And so I was like, oh my God, I was mortified. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going to say this little guy's name. Why are you saying that? Why are you saying bad man? And he said, because he's a bad man, Nana. He's bad. And I could just see this poor man just recoiling, this young man.
Yeah.
He probably traumatized him for life. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I have no idea where this is coming from. And I said, the other guy looks and he says to the little kid, my girlfriend's nephew, am I a bad man? He goes, nope, you're a good man. The guy was white. I was like, what is happening?
Wow.
Like super liberal family. So I go home and I say to my sister-in-law, sort of, whatever she wants, this is what just happened. What is happening? And she goes, we're liberal. Like we don't teach our children these things. I have no idea where that came from. And then he was sitting on the floor playing with his video game. And he said, Nana, come here. I'll show you Bad Man. So I go over to the video game and there it is. And it's a game called George Foreman Goes to the Fights or something like that. This is a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And of course, he's the little white guy and he's fighting all the big black bad men who are in the ring. And I'm watching it and I'm horrified, but he has been taught. And then that was the outward. He's just an innocent child speaking that thing. So I said, you know, let's break this. What else are you watching? And the next one was a video where it was a man walking down the street and he had a club. And the idea was to take the club and hit the woman over her head. And then you grab her by his hair. Like, what are you teaching your, do you buy these things? They're like, no, they're his big brothers. They're fine. I'm sure. Watch this. This is not fine. So, you know, we learn from our surroundings. We learn all kinds of things, of course, but when it comes to bias, it's the decisions that I make about a person based on a certain set of attributes that they possess through my filters. So that's why we can have people see the very same scene and the perpetrator was white running away, but they'll say it was a black guy. There's implicit bias and they'll swear to you. Because why? Because black people commit more crimes. That's implicit bias. So it can be really dangerous when we're not paying attention to what our belief systems are. It's why this time of COVID, the COVID lockdown right now, I was talking to my friend Ben. He said, these times have been so provocative, haven't they, Jamie? And he's just right on, right?
Yeah.
Who am I in evaluating who I am as a human being and values clarification and what do I value? And when COVID goes away, am I going to go back to sleep because we're going to all get busy again and forget about the work that needs to be done around this?
Right.
That's my fear. So police officers have training around implicit bias. It's mandated. There's lots of it. And when I'm doing those classes, I really try to do a deep dive around looking at and not judging. So people say things like, I'm not a racist. Yes, you have implicit bias. You do. So some.
Yeah, I read somewhere. Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
No, you go ahead.
I read somewhere that just because you have implicit bias doesn't mean you're racist.
No, it just means that you have implicit bias, right? It's and it can be implicit bias that's in favor of someone, right? And what is a racist? I mean, that's a hearty discussion that we can have mm-hmm. about that. I know, and I'll just say publicly that, you know, my family's 8 generations from Mobile, Alabama. There's no way that I cannot have racist ideology.
Right.
It's what do I do with it when it bubbles up to the surface, when I have a thought about something that comes up. And usually if something comes up, it's like, wait, what's that? So another thing about implicit bias, when I think about it and I think about when it starts bubbling up or it doesn't bubble up, we just react in something. I ask myself, Liz, whose voice was that?
Good question.
And oftentimes, because I really want to have some grace with myself around this and also other people, because you'll see people say, I don't even know where that came from. Well, I mean, I know where it came from. It's a short walk to your parents' house in the living room where you grew up.
Yeah.
And what did they talk about? And what did they say? And in my family, the N-word was used regularly. You know, it was just common vernacular with black people working in the house, standing there. They would be in the living room saying those things. It was so upsetting to me as a child, but I still heard it. So, you know, what reaction we have to something then is based on how it was presented to us and what we've done with that. It's curious.
So you personally, when you bump into it, or when you're teaching a class and someone raises their hand and they're like, this is, you know, I bump into it. What do I do? What's the advice that you give to a person to unpack that bias?
Get curious. I say, this is the good news. if you haven't hurt anyone, this is the good news, that your unconscious has allowed this to bubble up and you get to take a look at that. Unfortunately, what most people do is they start judging themselves and that feels painful. So they stop the unpacking. I say, let's get the suitcase out and unpack it. This is going to be great. Who said that to you? Where did it come from? What's the origin of that belief or that idea? You know, what is that thing that's there? And eventually when we do that, we can actually undo that. It's not that it'll never come back up. It'll come back up, but it's like, yeah, that's not mine. That's not mine. Thank you. I just hand it over to you. Appreciate that. My old brain is trying to throw that up as some kind of a protection. And then it becomes kind of laughable. I had something happen a couple of weeks ago, and I feel embarrassed to even tell the story, but this is how an example of that. I was walking downtown. I can't even believe I'm going to say this on, you know, public radio. My dad had all kinds of sayings he said. He was mean. He was a mean man, and he loved to be mean to people. And this person came walking towards me, and I looked at them, and in my mind, I thought, this is terrible. You're probably not going to like me after this, Liz. But I thought, and it was completely unconscious, just whoop. Mm-hmm. Wow. Somebody hit you with an ugly stick. The moment I heard it, I stopped. I looked at that person and I noticed five things right away that were beautiful about them. Right? This is, it's neuroprogramming.
Yeah.
We can't help it. When it comes up and it arises, I also said quiet, I didn't say to them, oh, this is, I didn't tell them the whole story, but what I thought was, please forgive me, I'm so sorry. And I also said to myself, that's not mine. That belongs to you, Mike.
Right on, doing the work. And you have awareness right around it. And I'm sure that happens to 9 out of 10 people. It's happened to me where I'm like, whoa, okay, where did that come from?
Right.
And that's not okay. And that's not mine.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not mine. And I would say, you know, one of my teachers, I love Marianne. She says, yeah, when you were a kid, it wasn't yours. You were a kid, but you're a grown adult person and now it's yours. So what are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think being so kind to ourselves and thinking about that's really painful. It was painful to me to look at this person and think that that's what came up. But the good news about that, I think, is that it's ready to come up. It's when we oppress and push those things down and judge. The other thing I say to myself is, and this comes from a teacher, John told me this, and I love it. I forgive myself for judging myself.
Nice.
So let's move forward with that. So this wasn't mine. It isn't mine. I own it because it's in my brain.
Yeah.
My dad's dead. Here, Mike. Take this back to your grave with you. The question is for people, if we're working on this all the time, especially around anti-racism and working around our racist ideology or our ideas about gender or women or oppression of Black and brown people, whatever the thing is that we're thinking about, noticing what I'm noticing and looking at. And so I ask myself, what do I think is beautiful? Oh, I think that person's beautiful. What do I think is not beautiful? I look at that person and I think they're not beautiful. Well, what is it about that person that I don't actually think is beautiful? Let's sit here and look at this for a minute. They're actually beautiful. Look at them smiling and laughing. They're actually a gorgeous human being. So implicit bias is also a snap. It's fast.
Yeah.
And the enemy of implicit bias is conscious curiosity. Can I consciously think this is really painful and feels yucky? So I'm going to stop and I'm going to actually recalibrate my thinking in this moment. But it won't be enough to just do it once, Liz. That's the sad part. If we have a bunch of, you know, connectors and it's all just hardwired for us, then, you know, then there it is.
Yeah, it takes a while to build that new synapsis.
It takes a long time.
Unfortunately, yes. And it's work.
Right? It's a lot of work and it's a lot of hard work. And it's the willingness to sit down and like, just go sit in the park and watch. What do you think is okay and not okay? Who do you think is beautiful and not beautiful? What do you think is gorgeous and what do you think is not gorgeous? Why? Where did that belief come from? Who told you that? where did you actually learn that thing? So I have a funny implicit bias thing that's that happens, which is when I was a little kid, one of my resiliency factors I've talked about her on your show before was Dot, and she was a very large African American woman. And when we'd go to her house, my brother and I would just get all up in her, and she just put herself around us. She was so big, and just swallow us up and say, you know, you're safe now, babies. I got you. And so my implicit bias, when I see a large African-American woman inside, my body lights up like, oh, I'm safe. You know, she can be a serial killer. That's awesome. I don't know who this person is, but everything in my body says, yes, a lovely person. So now I laugh at that and I think, yes, a lovely person, I'm sure. You know, that's great. And she's not Dot. So, you know, what do we do? What do we do with that? I don't know. What are your thoughts about implicit bias? Why did you?
Gosh, well, actually, I just want to unpack what you just said a little bit, because this came up in a talk that I was listening to the other day, where you see somebody and if they match how you grew up, there's an instant connection there, like with Dot, but it can be a positive thing and it can be a negative thing too. Like if you unconsciously sense something, like say you had an abusive parent and, you know, unconsciously, you know, you're picking up on this person without even knowing it, you know, and you're attracted to this person because they are in fact later going to, you know, mimic that abuse in your life. So there can be that connection on both sides. So really, gosh, can we unpack that a little bit more? How our brain kind of attaches on to things like that. Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. You know, or that's it might good. Attach that's on good. To something. Oh, this is home. But home might not have been so good. You know,
I feel totally at home with this person. Yeah. Maybe we should get married and find out they're a sociopath, right?
Yeah.
Because because you were raised by a sociopath. And so, of course, it feels comfortable, you know. I mean, it's a little bit, it's different than implicit bias, but it certainly is around how we make judgments about people and who they are. And it comes down to just basic training. What was I trained to see about people? And what am I blind to around that? And then the subtle messages that we're always receiving about that. Yeah. For sure. I mean, you know, we could take it as far as like, how are men and women supposed to act in their gender roles? You know, that women are supposed to be more submissive. So when a woman like, you know, Hillary Clinton, she's such she draws so much fire, but she's a great example. And Michelle Obama, I'm going to talk about Michelle Obama.
Okay.
Powerful, brilliant, beautiful, awesome human.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I was actually standing somewhere one time and a woman said, I can't stand her to me. And I said, can you tell me why? Rather than just let it go by. Can you tell me why? I'm curious. And she said, it's just something about her. I said, do you know what it is? God, I'm so curious. What is it? And she said, of course, I was assuming it was her blackness, but she said, you know what it is? It seems silly, but women are not supposed to wear sleeveless shirts. And she's wearing a sleeveless shirt. She's wearing it around and she's kind of muscular. And you know what? It just doesn't look right. It doesn't look right.
Interesting.
And I said, that's so interesting. So you don't like her because she's kind of muscular. So she's fit and she's wearing a sleeveless shirt. And she said, yeah, I don't like it. I don't think it's presidential. So fascinating. I saw her a few years later and I said, so our first lady now, who of course posed nude.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about her? Oh, she is awesome. The way that she dresses, everything about her. And I laughed and I said, you're aware that she posed nude, right? And she said, that was a different time. That's completely different. Right. And this is just an unconscious, I mean, I have to laugh at it. It's an unconscious, I laughed out loud in this moment. And this person said, why are you laughing? And I said, you get how ridiculous you are, right? She posed nude, muscular arms with a beautiful, elegant dress. And I looked right at her and I was thinking in my head, you know, I'm sort of judging you right now. Like, come on. Can't you see what's the difference? So it's okay for a white woman, but it's not okay for a black woman. That's bias. So
Or
you're
it
not
could
even
have been
allowed.
the image because she really fit, you know, Michelle, the presidential theme, you know, but her own fashion, you know, and there always was that kind of help me out here with some descriptive words of the wives and the way that they dress, kind of like Jackie Onassis, who I love and
Oh yeah.
adored, in fact, all the way up to, through fashion design school,
Just like
waited on her.
classy and
Yeah,
elegant and
classy, elegant, demure,
smart as
feminine.
hell.
Yeah, but kind of, you know, hiding behind
Oh yeah.
intelligence, you
Right.
know, and no sleeves could be, you know, representation, you know, re representative of being forward, you know, and not holding yourself back as possibly a woman should,
As women should, and
as women should.
especially,
Yeah.
right, especially a black woman, right? It's just it's curious to me.
Interesting.
I even had another follow-up conversation with that person, who is, we're just friendly enough where I can kind of, jest with them a little bit. And I said, did you think any more about that? And she said, I thought a lot about it actually afterwards. I mean, I think this is our work, is just to get people to get curious. What is that about? What is that? Where did that come from? Who is that? What is that voice? Who said that? And she said, it really, after I thought about it, I went home and I told my husband that I felt ridiculous after I heard myself say that, because what kind of a double standard is that? That's just crazy. So yeah, it's fascinating. Implicit bias. We all have it. It's how we actually pick our lovers, our friends, our mates. It's the people that we're attracted to and turned off to. It's when do we become aware of what that is and why we're doing that?
Right.
Why do we give somebody a break for that when we're going to hold someone to task for the very same thing because they look different or act different than
Right.
us?
So this is kind of bringing up familiarity. So how does the role of that play into bias? You know, and kind of breaking that down a little bit. You know,
The
things that
role.
we're familiar with or things
Right.
that we like, you know.
Yeah. There's actually a thing in psychology called the gravitational pull to the familiar, right? That's not what psychologists call it, but that's kind of the universal term for my amygdala, that part of my brain that wants to keep me the same because it keeps me safe. And the lie is that keeping me the same will keep me safe. Actually, that's not true at all. But it's why people stay in terrible marriages forever, the gravitational pull to the familiar. It's why they stay in a job that they hate.
It's what I
It's
know, it's what I can handle.
yeah, the devil I know is better than the devil that I don't know. So it's why change doesn't happen. The great change makers knew, we actually talked about this, I think, in our first trauma video. They knew that once I know what I don't love, I need to get clear about a vision. And stay out of the how, because when I get in the little nitty-gritty of the how, it'll start to pull me down. So rather than that, getting a vision. So who do I want to be? I want to be a loving, kind person. And instead of thinking about that, how is that? I start thinking about what are the thoughts that I have that aren't loving and kind. And let's excuse those from my mental patterning. Let's send those away to somewhere else. Let's retrain our brains and recalibrate our brains to what we do want instead of what we don't want.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. I
It's
like that.
interesting. There's like so many different ways this could go, thinking about right now how, people posting horrible memes about our president or saying things, answering hate with hate. Is that really what you want? That's you're not going towards the vision that we want. You're actually, doing the very same thing. The
Actually giving it more
question,
momentum.
right? And that it's easy for us to sit around and throw rocks at him. He's an easy target. But what are we actually doing with ourselves? What visions are we creating for ourselves about who we want to be, the thoughts that we want to have? And if we're dwelling on hate about him, then how are we different? That's the interesting thing. And you will become the sum of your thoughts. And our thoughts are the sum of what we're trained to be. And by thinking about what I was trained in, I actually find it fascinating. once I can set aside the judgment,
Mm-hmm.
if I'm judging myself, that's going to be a really painful experience for me. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we, let's see, how does it affect our preferences in social groups, society, behavior, and perceptions?
Isn't it true? Like, so here's an implicit bias. The Fonz. Are you old enough for the Fonz?
Oh yes.
Henry Winkler, right?
Yep.
I mean, like, all I have to do is just say A, and it's like, you know,
the he was image.
So, he was cool, and he created this image of what is cool. And Richie Cunningham, not cool, nerd. And Potsy and the rest of the group. And then Richie's mom, Mrs. Cunningham, the real mom, the nice, lovely mother, and Mr. Cunningham coming. Like, that's all implicit bias. And the thing that the Fonz did is he switched the image of leather wearing gangster, slick back your hair, to he would be the guy that would come in and say, hey, here's the right thing to do. We just need to do it this way. And he flipped on its head this whole image that we had, the bias that we had toward mm-hmm. people who looked like him.
Yep.
In a TV show. Isn't it interesting? Which is kind of a fun. I love the Fonz so much. I still have my Fonzie necklace. I'll wear it on your show one day.
Nice.
When I was a little kid. It was so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how TV can kind of play that role to make some normalize something. Make something
it's cool
okay.
When it does that.
Yeah. Right? In those yeah, when it does that. We'll leave the other stuff alone that. For now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was watching this this show. It's like, I'm not gonna be able to think of this. I was listening to Brene Brown, and she said to watch this show, so I watched it. It's not at all anything I would have thought Brene Brown would watch, but mm-hmm. it's a show about attorneys, and it's after The Good Wife. There was that show, The Good Wife, and now this is the next one, and Diane plays the person in it. But it's really interesting in the show. I noticed as I was watching it, because one of my friends was talking to me about the color of skin of African Americans and how light skinned African Americans get further than dark skin. And so it was a very interesting mm-hmm. conversation. And she was explaining to me all about that. And so I noticed in the show, because she brought that to my attention, that there were three characters in the show that had a big role who were very dark-skinned African-Americans. And I thought, I wonder if I would have noticed that 3 days ago had I not had this conversation. And now I really was noticing. And then I'm watching other shows and I'm noticing there are none.
Mm-hmm.
So that TV show, the people who are casting the characters, they are conscious, awake people, and they're very purposefully creating a diverse and inclusive environment in the
good, that's great.
The Good Fight. The Good Fight, that's the name of the show. It's
quite okay.
interesting. Yeah. So if we're watching that and we're not aware of what we're watching, then we might not even know, but we're being programmed all the time. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. It's also fascinating. So we often harbor these negative stereotypes about others without consciously realizing, you know. So counter to our expressed beliefs sometimes, right? So how do we rewire our unconscious to form a new belief?
Well, it takes practice, you know, and I really attribute it to like going to the gun range, you know, as a range master. I went to the gun range all the time and shot a lot, because it just takes a moment to get off target. And if I want to stay on target with what I'm doing, I need to go to the range. And so I call it my mental range. What is my mental range? I'm noticing, am I sloppy in my conversation? Do I know the right word to say? Am I being humble enough to ask? What is it? How would I describe this? Can you help me? Well, you know, what is that piece of what that information is. When I was at FBI school, I was having a hard time. I was doing a thing, Liz, called jerking the trigger. And so you're trying to hit the target. And when you jerk the trigger, so you're anticipating the recoil of the gun that's going to come back. So what happens is you start to pull the trigger, and in anticipation that this thing's going to come back at you, you jerk it. Well, when you jerk it, what happens is it twists the gun. This is like slow motion, boom. And I hit the target there instead of dead on. I don't get a bullseye. And I was struggling. The more I did it, the more I jerked the trigger, the more I jerked the trigger, the more I did it. I was like spinning. And this FBI agent came up behind me. He was so great. And he said, I'm going to help you. And he put his arms around behind me. And he put his finger on top of my finger. It sounds silly that it's a gun analogy, but it's really how we change things up. And he slowly pulled my finger back with there was no ammunition in the gun. And so it just click, click, just dry fire. We were dry firing, dry firing, dry firing until I relaxed. And then he put a bullet in, did it again. And you know, what your question leads me to think is that sometimes we get stuck in our patterns and we need help to see what's true. And we need somebody to literally come behind us and walk us through and hold us in a safe way so that we can learn this new way to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we practice that new way of being enough times, it becomes natural and habituated. But, you know, in neuroscience, that Joe Dispenza, I love that Joe Dispenza TED Talk, because he actually shows those little neural connectors. I don't know if you've seen that
one. Oh, yeah, I love him.
Where are you? Where are you? And the one disattaches the old one and the new one, which is bigger. And it's, so it's the strongest. What is the strongest neural connector? So if I walk around saying, you know, I can't stand Republicans, or I can't stand Democrats. I am forming neural connectors. I can't stand Democrats. My brain will start to search for evidence to prove that that's true. And then I'll start to see all the reasons. So that's why I can watch this video clip and you can watch this video clip and we see totally different things. It's really potent and beautiful how beautiful our minds are, but also can be really scary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know this or not, but women have tons more ability to see peripherally than men do, because men had to, way back when, for the hunt, look far, far away to see the woolly mammoth doing this. And the women were walking, looking for herbs and to collect medicine. And so they had all this peripheral vision. It's why when men are standing there and they'll look at a woman and they do that and their wife says, "You're a dog. You just checked her out." And they've proven that women do it just as much, but because they have the peripheral vision, they'll turn their head. So,
oh, that's too funny.
Kind of funny, right? But who has the reputation of being the dogs? The men.
Mm.
That's implicit bias.
Bias.
And it's explicit. Once I say it, it becomes explicit bias.
Oh, yeah. What's the difference between the two, implicit and explicit?
Implicit's in my head. And explicit's once it comes out of my mouth, but it's also can be facial expressions. You know, we're so good. 7% of communication is words. So 93% is how I look, what I'm doing, what I say. And I know you know someone in your life that can give you that look and put you on your knees in 2 seconds. They don't have to say a word. You don't have that person.
Yeah.
And or, you know, correct you and they don't even need to say a word. And you're like, "That's not what I meant. Let me say something different." And people say, what just happened? And they gave me a look.
Gave me that look.
Right. So that's another way of communicating that's so critically important for us in understanding. But it's all of those things that we become attuned to as truth. So the look of a friend, what we feel comfortable with, what we don't. So what this all requires is, you know, if we want to change stuff up, Liz, is a willingness to get uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And great people are willing to get uncomfortable in the interest of growth. And not shaming people when they don't know. And say, "Can I help you? Can I hold you right here? I actually know a little bit about this. Let me help you steady your aim so you can hit the target of life."
Right.
You know, the target of speech, the right thing to say.
You also do a lot of education with professionals every year. So what can we do institutionally?
Institutionally.
Okay, with the police. I know it's big. So I know how to do it as an individual, but how do we take a group?
Well, and shift them? You know, when we talk about the police, not all police need to be shifted. You know, I work with a lot of law enforcement every single year. And, you know, I'm going to say this, so you may get some pushback on your show, but okay. I meet about one, can I say asshole?
Yeah, I think so.
I meet about one asshole a year that I think, "You're scary. you're scary. And of course, if they're in my classrooms, then I go and say something to someone. This is what they said. This is how it looked. And I write up a report, because I don't know, they may be waiting for one more thing on that person. We can't know that.
Right.
It may be a one-off for that person. I don't even know. But how do we shift it? It's a cultural shift that we see that is just still, you know, they call it the rat code. There's so many different things, like those three officers standing there.
Yeah.
But that was their training officer killing a man in front of them. And that, you know, we're trained in law enforcement that there is a chain of command, and we're supposed to follow that chain of command, and he must know more than me, and there must be a good reason. So let's just kind of unpack it a little bit more. If you and I are going to be police officers and go out in the field, Cagney and Lacey. Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
We're going to be Cagney and Lacey. If we're going to be in the field driving around in a car all day, Liz, I may not even know you, but I have to give you something right away. The very first moment I meet you and get in the car, I have to give it to you 100%. And I have no basis to even know this, but I have to do it. Do you know what that is?
Trust.
Mm-hmm. Trust with my life. I have to trust that you will have my back. So what this does in our brains is it's not natural to do that. We don't do that with people we just meet. So there's this, you know, this code of trust and honor. And so it switches this thing of, well, then in my brain, all police officers, all probation officers, all parole officers are trustworthy and good. Well, okay, when we're thinking about this logically, intellectually, we know that's not true. But when we're trained over and over, you're going to go out with so-and-so today, go get in the car, and you go. Your brain does a thing where I have to hope that you would have my back in a bad situation. And more than that, the only way I can like be with you today is if I trust that you're going to do this, even if you're a jerk. So there's that component. So then I see my person that I trust doing something, and I'm having cognitive dissonance. Like, wait a minute. I've never seen this behavior before. Is this really happening in front of me? I don't know what to do. So what needs to happen more in law enforcement, and it does. So I don't like this or that, right? That law enforcement is bad or police. I'm not in favor of defunding the police, and I'm not in favor of any of that. What I'm in favor of is let's actually give them more money for appropriate training and teach them that during our training, when I trained the carotid restraint, for instance, which is now illegal everywhere. And by the way, that cop was not doing a carotid restraint or a chokehold. That was not what that was. So I don't know why we needed to take that away. But I taught that move. But Liz, you know what else we taught? We taught people how to do that. And then we'd have a thing where I'd say, now here's an officer gone bad. He's applying the carotid restraint. What are you going to do? The person's tapping out. The person's going down. The person's going to, and the officers would run in and grab him and get him off. And they trained to do that. You know, Jimmy, stop. Jimmy, whatever.
Right.
But we will not rise to the level of the occasion. We will rise to the level of our training, period.
Yeah.
And if officers have never trained to intervene in excessive force, which is federal law, you must intervene in excessive use of force. You must. It's an order. But if I've never been trained and all I've ever trained is to pull my gun, we're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other piece of, you know, we also trained this thing called tapping out, right? Which was I'd see you get jacked up on adrenaline and I knew that you've lost your marbles. And so we had a culture in our department where we could come up and say, I got this. And we knew what it meant. It meant you're losing your marbles here. Let me help you. And
nice.
So the officer would stand down and someone else would come in. And those cultures are not in every department. It was, I thought that's how every department operated. And in California, in terms of probation departments, most of them do. We don't see a lot of that. But absent training to stop someone, physical hands-on training, this is how it feels to stop your fellow officer. And then there's the other piece of what if I'm wrong? Like What if what I'm seeing is not what I'm seeing? What if there's something I'm not seeing? It's a lot if people have not actually practiced for that moment. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Liz, but it's happened to me a lot. You're in an argument with someone that you love, that you're intimate with, right? Mm-hmm. Are you your best self in those moments where it's really heated?
No, sometimes you're human.
Right?
Sometimes you lose it.
Sometimes we're human and we lose it. So what do we need to do? We train for those moments as couples outside of a fight situation. Mm-hmm. So we train things like in the Love and Relationships class, I talk about, we say, you know what? I'm noticing that I'm really triggered right now, honey. I want to stop because I love you. I don't want to say anything, but I'm not going to do that in the moment when it counts. If we've never had that discussion,
right?
Because Liz, if you're my partner, I need for you to say in that moment, great, time out. What would be a disaster is if we weren't on the same page and you said, oh, hell no, we're finishing this conversation right now.
Yeah.
Now it's on. But good couples practice for those moments when there's going to be discord and they have certain agreements. Like in my relationships, one of the agreements is to have a bookmark.
Mm-hmm. Can we come back to this later?
Let's bookmark this conversation. Yep. It matters to me. And right now I'm not my best. I'm not sure why. Something... I don't even know, need to know why. It'll come to me and we can talk about that later, but let's go do something else. Go take a walk, or I'm going to go take 20 minutes, quiet time, or whatever that thing is.
Right.
So it's no different than that. You know, with a little child, your little child is acting out. If the first time you're a good parent and you say, you know, what do we do when mommy says that I need you to be good right now and trust me? Well, if that's never happened before, the little child's going to look at you like, I don't know. What do we do? But if you train for that moment and said, you know, sometimes there's going to be times where I need you to trust mommy. I'm going to ask you to come with me and I need for you not to ask me any questions and I'll explain it to you later, honey, but we're going to just go. Okay. So the little kid knows. And then, so when that incident happens, they're like, oh, I know what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is in California, there's probably, I can't remember, 56, 53, 58 counties. There's a lot of counties. And in each county I work in, each culture is different. And it's a culture of training. It's a culture of, what are we going to do? I have one county right now that called me and said, I think I mentioned this last time, we actually want to have debrief sessions and we want to have space for us to just talk. And I said, well, it's not going to fall in the budget for training. They said, we don't even care about that. We just want, people are hurting. We want it. What a beautiful culture, right? If every department did that, how lovely would that be?
Yeah.
And there's other counties and other departments where I can feel when I'm teaching that, you know, people are scared. They're afraid to speak up. There's other counties where I was working with this past weekend, and you know, everyone in the class, I said, before we do our class, let's just have a little bit of a briefing. How's everybody doing? I was teaching trauma. So mm-hmm. We're in the middle of a bunch of traumas right now. What would you like to talk about? And people felt really free and comfortable to talk.
Nice.
So these broad generalizations about police organizations, there are exceptional, beautiful humans doing amazing work. And that is by far the majority of people that I meet. Don't misunderstand me. Should there be a cleaning house of these other people? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Why hasn't that happened? I don't know how to answer that. It's a leadership issue. But throwing a broad brush across everybody, I think people are making a mistake with that, because I think what's going to happen is, if I'm a good cop and I'm out on the street and I'm doing a really good job and I'm super loving, I saw a video the other day of a woman cop and she was walking down the street and somebody just came up and just shoved her. What did she do?
Yeah.
So what's happening now is that we don't want to dehumanize groups. We don't ever want to dehumanize anybody.
No.
But in response, we're going to dehumanize all law enforcement. That's not the appropriate response.
No.
Let's unpack what's true in each one of these individual situations. Let's hold people accountable. But my answer is actually take a ton more money and throw it into training and make these trainings not only mandatory, but also then training from the top for leadership about how do we discipline? How do we hold people accountable? Are we regularly testing people? Are we having, You know, in California, they just made it a requirement to have LGBT training. So I just scheduled like 25 of those with departments.
Great.
Which is great. And it's a basic, it's a 4-hour class. Mm-hmm. We can't teach everybody, but at least they're going to have some, and we're going to talk about implicit bias. And I teach an 8-hour class just about this topic where we do a deep dive into what are the things I believe about people. And people have time to write and think about those things and really ponder what's true.
That's great, Jamie.
Yeah.
What do you do when you run up against, like, when people try to suppress or deny when you're teaching?
The other day I was teaching, and so I had like, it was like 40 people on a screen. And it was really funny. I had two, what I would call kind of conservative counties, and one kind of liberal county. And so there was this one guy, and I could see him, and he kept doing, you know, 7% his words, but I could see his little picture on the Zoom, and he's like doing this, like he can't even control himself. And so somebody said something else, and he like rolled his eyes in the back of his head. So when he called a break, I can write to people on the in the little chat, uh-huh. And I wrote to him. I'm like, sir, I respectfully would like to remind you that people can see your reactions. You're making very large expressions of what appears to me to be a disagreement with what is being said. So I'm wondering if you might be interested in containing yourself a little bit more. It was like super respectful. Kind of like, hello, we can see you. So then it's a trauma-informed care class, and in this particular class, I am mandated to show a video about LGBT kids. I don't know if you're aware, but you know, the most suicide, the most abused, the most beat up, the most traumatized, trans women of color, most sexually assaulted, the most. And so I show this video, it like comes with the class, you know, and this poor guy, he was like, it was like he had, he couldn't take it anymore. He just had to like, oh my God. And I don't know if he, so I typed in, I can still see you.
You know? Did he respond at all?
This poor guy. He stopped for a minute, but he couldn't. He was literally having a physiological reaction of disgust to what he was seeing. And in those moments, you know, what do I do? If I was in person, I would actually go and say something to the training manager. And I've had to do those things. I've had some brutal stuff happen in class, but I want to be really careful to say that those are the minority of people, and the majority of people, like 99.9% of people I meet, are totally amazing. So I report it. And I let the training manager know this person was having a really hard time in class. And, you know, this was their thing. And so, you know, what oftentimes they'll do is say, can you take them on individually for an hour of class? And I laugh. Like, I'm a woman who dresses like a man. I'm not sure I'm the right person for this guy, but I'll do it if you want. And usually I can win the person over if we have a session, you know, look, I'm a human, you're a human. I'm not sure what all that reaction is. What, you know, what's actually happening for you? And I can have some compassion for that human.
Right.
But let's talk about, but a lot of departments will just say, yeah, sorry. That's just how he is. That's just what he does. And, wow. And that guy's going to do something bad.
Yeah.
You know, not that guy, but people like that, if they're not exposed to different people in different situations and there's some expectation of professionalism, and it starts at the top.
Mm-hmm. So how do we work with a person like that when it comes to bias?
Well, so if I would have been his boss, I would have sat down and had a big talk with him and talked to him, first of all, just about basic professionalism. You don't get to act like that in a class.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you kidding me? You can't hold yourself together. You're not emotionally intelligent enough to hold yourself together and not let everyone see that. And number two, why would you think that it's okay to act like that in a classroom situation? And number three, what's happening here? Why do you feel so threatened? Let's talk about that too. And, you know, let's just have a real conversation about what's going on. But leaving that kind of behavior unchecked is not okay.
Right.
It's not okay.
It's going to show up elsewhere.
It's going to come out sideways one way or another. There's lots of different things that could be going on. No, I had this one guy one time in a class. It was the day that gay marriage became legal. And I've learned to not teach on certain days. Never teach on an election day, because half your class is going to be angry and the other half will gloat.
Interesting.
So don't do it. It's a bad idea. And when there's like major decisions, if I know that there's going to be some major decision, kind of stay away from the classroom, because I'm a human, so I have an opinion about stuff. So I came into the classroom and gay marriage had been approved of in California. I was living in California at the time. And I was, of course, I was thrilled inside, and I had already had some phone calls that morning. Yay, this is so great. Like, I don't want to get married, but that's so great that, you know, what a big deal. And so I go into the classroom and several people come into the classroom and talk about implicit bias. They look at me, of course, you know, I wear a man suit when I'm there, but they come walking in, they're LGBT people, and they're looking at me and they're like, backing out our little secret code. And then this man just comes walking in and he says, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Wow.
And I had this humongous reaction. I remember, but of course you can't tell when I have a huge reaction. And I looked at him and I said, I'm sorry, sir. I'm not even going to ask you if you just said what I think you said. I heard what you said. And so let's step outside the classroom. And he says, I can express my opinion. And I said, you can, but not in my classroom. And we just walked down to the training manager and I said, this is what this gentleman just said. And she's like, wow. And she just looked at him and she goes, wow, how many times have we talked to you about this? And he goes, you know, I just say, and she looks at me, it was great. And she said, do you know what today is? And he says, yeah, I know. And he says, you know how many people in that class are celebrating right now? And you just totally pissed all over their whole thing. She just held him to task. She said, you're going to take this class again, but not today. I'm not even going to make Jamie sit there with you all day. Go back to your work assignment. And she wrote him up.
Right on.
So there's those kinds of leaders as well. I think it's big, and I think we have to be willing to speak up. And when I went back into the classroom, I addressed it because everyone had heard it. I didn't act like, oh, nothing happened. So you may have heard that today was a very historic day in history for LGBT people, and it's a big deal. And so I know that some people in the room are celebrating. And so you don't have to celebrate, but the law says, and professionalism and ethics say, this is how we're to act as professionals. So let's do that going forward. How about that? You private high fives on the lunch break. You know?
Nice. Well done.
But that takes courage. You know, professional courage is really hard if you're not in an environment where you're supported.
Cool. And what would you like to end with today, Jamie?
To end with hope. You know, I love all of these Zoom conversations that I'm getting to have with people. And you and I had a really lovely conversation before we went on. I feel full of hope. I think people are really doing values clarifications about who they are and what they stand for in this world and who am I and what's really okay and what's not okay with me. And I love that. I love seeing people learning and growing and being willing to look at their human person across from them and say, this isn't okay with me that you say that, or yay, I support you for saying this. I also want to give a shout out to this woman is doing a daily mailing thing. It's free and it's called the Anti-Racism Daily or something like that. You can just Google anti-racism letter, or I'll give it to Liz and she'll put it in the footer. And that is really educating me a lot. She's taking all of these issues and breaking them down instead of just doing a big, everything's wrong. It's like, no, let's look at this piece and let's look at this piece. Like, why do we want to capitalize African-American and Black? And why do we want to do this? And why? What's the thing about this? And what does this mean? And she breaks it down in the most gorgeous way. So
yeah, she really does a good job.
Oh, you're looking at it too?
Yeah.
I love it.
Anti-racism daily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's
so
really
hope.
Good.
I want to end with hope. How about you?
Yes, that sounds great. And how can people reach you if they need to?
Well, wait, what do you want to end with?
Well, we're at the end of our show, so we're out of time. So really quick, what's your email?
islandconsultingandtraining.com. islandconsultingandtraining.com is my website, and they can find me there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jamie. Everybody, Jamie Wolf, thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure. And join us again next time. She'll be joining us again on Raise the Vibe. And I'm super looking forward to our next topic. Have a great day, everybody. And remember to get out there and raise the vibe. This is Liz Peterson on Raise the Vibe.
Thanks for being you, Liz.
Thanks, Jamie.